normality. In this work, I have to examine the capitalist mode of production and the conditions of production and exchange corresponding to that mode. Up to the present time, their classic ground is England. That is the reason why England is used as the chief illustration in the development of my theoretical ideas. If, however, the German listener shrugs his shoulders at the condition of the English industrial and agricultural labourers, or in optimist fashion comforts himself with the thought that in Germany things are not nearly so bad, I must plainly tell him, Dette fabula narratur. It is of you that the story is told. Intrinsically, it is not a question of the higher or lower degree of development of the social antagonisms that result from the natural laws of capitalist production. It is a question of these laws themselves, of these tendencies working with iron necessity towards inevitable results. The country that is more developed industrially only shows to the less developed the image of its own future. But apart from this, where capitalist production is fully naturalized among the Germans, for instance in the factories proper, the condition of things is much worse than in England, because the counterpoise of the factory acts is wanting. In all other spheres, we, like all the rest of continental Western Europe, suffer not only from the development of capitalist production, but also from the incompleteness of that development. Alongside the modern evils, a whole series of inherited evils oppress us, arising from the passive survival of antiquated modes of production with their inevitable train of social and political anachronisms. We suffer not only from the living, but from the dead. Le mort saisit le vif. The dead holds the living in his grasp. Formula of French law. The social statistics of Germany and the rest of continental Western Europe are, in comparison with those of England, wretchedly compiled. But they raise the veil just enough to let us catch a glimpse of the Medusa head behind it. We should be appalled at the state of things at home if, as in England, our governments and parliaments appointed periodically commissions of inquiry into economic conditions. If these commissions were armed with the same plenary powers to get at the truth, if it was possible to find for this purpose men as competent, as free from partisanship and respects of persons as are the English factory inspectors, her medical reporters on public health, her commissioners of inquiry into the exploitation of women and children, into housing and food. Perseus wore a magic cap down over his eyes and ears as a make-believe that there are no monsters. Let us not deceive ourselves on this. As in the 18th century, the American War of Independence sounded the tocsin for the European middle class, so that in the 19th century, the American Civil War sounded it for the European working class. In England, the process of social disintegration is palpable. When it has reached a certain point, it must react on the continent. There it will take a form more brutal or more humane, according to the degree of development of the working class itself. Apart from higher motives, therefore, their own most important interests dictate to the classes that are for the nonce the ruling ones the removal of all legally removable hindrances to the free development of the working class. For this reason, as well as others, I have given so large a space in this volume to the history, the details, and the results of English factory legislation. One nation can and should learn from others. And even when a society has got upon the right track for the discovery of the natural laws of its movement, and it is the ultimate aim of this work to lay bare the economic law of motion of modern society, it can neither clear by bold leaps nor remove by legal enactments the obstacles offered by the successive phases of its normal development, but it can shorten and lessen the birth pangs. To prevent possible misunderstanding, a word. I paint the capitalist and the landlord in no sense couleur de rose, that is, seen through rose-tinted glasses, but here individuals are dealt with only insofar as they are the personifications of economic categories, embodiments of particular